Journal, the second hour of the show. We're digging through those Epstein files. Moments ago, the DOJ announced they were releasing thousands of more pages. And interesting enough, we found a little bit more. We found some more interesting things in regards to their files. Surprise, surprise, it looks like they weren't being transparent when they told us they were being transparent. What do I mean by that? Well, there's a PDF labeled Epstein Black Book. And there's an unredacted version being sent around the FBI back in 2019. Yeah. I felt like I was going crazy this morning. I was reading this. I was like, wait a minute. Weren't we told? I thought we were told this didn't exist. I'm looking to see if the Black Book itself has been provided to us in these redactions, of course. But again, the subject line itself literally says Black Book. Literally says Black Book. And then they're passing around. So I don't know what else to make of this, folks. President Trump's name also coming up on the flight logs, according to an email that was sent around prior to the 2020 election. So tread lightly on that one. I wouldn't jump the gun quite yet. I'll wait till I see that one. Also in that flight, though, they also say in one instance, they say there's at least eight times. One of those instances, though, I believe his daughter was on the plane as well, and so was his son Eric, Tiffany and Eric. Then there was one other time where they claimed that he was flying by himself with Jeffrey. So we'll keep waiting. President Trump obviously denying all of this, so we'll see how this all plays out. Oh, the president just released a Christmas photo. I just got that one. I'll have to get that up on the X for you guys in just a moment. But interesting enough, folks, we're going to be digging into a lot more in the second hour of the show. Specifically, we are diving into a lot of different topics. Venezuela, for one. As many of you guys know, tensions are heating up between the United States and Venezuela, and mainly because, well, President Trump has said that he's going to stop them from shipping drugs into our country. Keep in mind, though, Venezuela isn't one of the biggest threats when it comes to the drug imports right now. I believe the last statistic I looked at is they represent about 10%, but he's specifically funneling in on fentanyl. And so that's been his big fight. He's also obviously taking on Nicolas Maduro. Now, that's a fight that Barack Obama himself at one point was kind of interested in taking up. He did not like Nicolas Maduro, and he consistently did call out Maduro. So now President Trump is renewing that. Obviously, we've talked about it before, the oil tankers that have been seized. President Trump just announced earlier this week his plans on what to do with those oil tankers and what to do with the oil that's been seized. We'll bring that clip for you also in the second portion of this show. Plus, we're also going to talk about the DOJ, because the DOJ is fighting for your Second Amendment rights. I never thought I'd say that, and I had to ask around to make sure that this wasn't like a PR push, because, you know, I don't like to push propaganda, but I've spoken to some great legal minds, and they all say, no, I mean, it looks like the DOJ is really serious about going after those who are trying to violate the Second Amendment rights in this country. Which is incredible, which is absolutely incredible. So we'll be diving into that in just a little bit as well. We'll also be continuing digging into all this Epstein stuff that's dropping. A lot is dropping in regards to Epstein. A lot is dropping in that case as well. So we look forward to that. We'll also be joined with Harrison Smith in studio in the third hour of the program, because I've got a lot of questions for him. He's ready to enlighten us about the history of Kwanzaa. I know many of you guys know this is Harrison's beat. So once I kind of thought about this story and how I wanted to cover it, there's only one person that you could bring into the studio for that, and that is Harrison Smith. So he'll be joining us in a bit as well. I'll also be taking your calls to kind of kick off the holiday. So we got a lot to do over here, a lot more to dive into. Again, folks, I want to remind you, we just launched a couple of hours ago. I guess it's about 2 hours ago, maybe. Beef tallow over at the alexjonesstore.com. When you head on over to the shop, you got to take a look at this, because it's grass-fed beef tallow, 100% grass-fed, and it is now available over at thealexjonesstore.com. Of course, as many of you guys know, we don't want any part in those seed oils. We're always looking for healthier alternatives, and this is one of them. As many of you guys know, beef tallow is packed with nutrients like vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E, and vitamin K, and this is a great alternative for you all at home. So if you're interested, you got to head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. We just launched this, and you get 25% off now when you become a subscriber today. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. Make sure you snag yourself some tallow.
challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all joining us today. We're digging into more Epstein files as they continue to be released. We'll bring you the very latest shortly, though. Looks like there is a black book. The FBI had it. Surprise, surprise. And they were passing it around. There's a 2019 email that says just that Epstein, in fact, did have a black book. The subject line to the email says black book. The attachment says Epstein black book PDF. And then the FBI, someone over at the human trafficking division, is saying specifically in this email that they have attached an unredacted version for whoever they're sending it to convenience. And so, again, we're learning more. Now, there's more accusations being made. And again, I opened up the show by warning you all that the DOJ was just saying that there was all these accusations that are going to be dropped in these latest files about President Trump. And they said that these are politically motivated. And that's kind of how they left it. Now, we do, according to one of the emails that was sent, and again, it's an email, it's not an actual document, but they did say that President Trump did fly on that, Epstein's plane, at least 8 times, it looks like. One of those occasions included his daughter, Tiffany, and Eric, according to that email, and then they claim he flew on the plane once with just Epstein alone, and another time with another individual as well. There was just a total of 3 of them. So we're learning more, we're getting more, we're going to keep bringing you what we're learning as it develops. But there's a lot more going on the front of Jeffrey Epstein and so much more. As many of you guys know, we have fought long and hard for these documents to understand what was happening behind the scenes in all of this. Now, unfortunately, the DOJ really going hard with these redactions, and it's very hard to kind of sift through all of this. So we're trying to tread lightly on this front. And we don't want to misrepresent anything that's going on right now. Joining me to discuss is Matt Tardio. He is a podcaster and a veteran, and he has also been following these Epstein document dumps. You know, Matt, we had you on scheduled for something else in regards to Venezuela, but we're going to do our best to kind of bounce around a topic to topic, so we're winging it right now. Welcome to the show, Matt. You do a great job on your podcast. And I saw you live yesterday. You were talking about Venezuela, so you're the first one to come into my mind when I was thinking about all of this, so thanks for jumping on with us. But your reaction to what we're learning about the Epstein stuff, because we're learning specifically in this first email dump that there's a, and again, this is the quote from the email directly, Epstein black book. And I'm pretty sure we were told there was no black book. What's going on here?
It certainly appears that there's a black book, right? Like there's no other way to get around it. And I spent a couple of years in law enforcement after I retired from the military as well. So when you start looking at things and you bring up this term like preponderance of the evidence, it would certainly seem at this point that there is 100% a black book that exists. And prior to that, floating around in the FBI was a redacted version of the black book. So then the next question is, why did the FBI have a redacted version of the black book that was floating around? And then this email communication has to exist to why there is an unredacted version as well that's seemingly more protected than the redacted version. Who's in there?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my many questions. And, you know, there's this, I'm going to hold off before I dive into the details on this because, I mean, I'm so worried about the fake information that we're going into the archives that they've put up so far. And we're trying to just dig to make sure that what's being posted on social media is accurate. But there's an allegation of a sexual assault claim back in 95 that we're going to dig and just make sure that the screenshot actually matches what was dumped by the DOJ. Because I'm sure you saw yesterday, Matt, there was a video, and actually this one was dumped by the DOJ, but there was a video clip. This specific one was a video of Jeffrey Epstein's cell, and there was a video they were trying to claim looked like, and I saw it, I was like, that looks like AI, that doesn't look real.
AI.
It is AI, and people were circulating it, and it looked like the DOJ actually just put it into the file specifically only to say that this was fake and this was circulating online. fine.
Right.
But people ran it as if it was fact-based. And this is why it's so important to read through this, because we got other claims being made right now. And we're just going to make sure that it's physically there before we jump to it. But I mean, Matt, when you saw that video circulating, I mean, the first thing I thought is, this doesn't even look real. This is fake, guys. AI. Let me repeat. This is AI. This is not real. But yeah, this was circulating yesterday. Why is it that people put this stuff out there and think we won't catch on to this?
Well, I think that the people that are putting those things out there is who you specifically need to pay attention to. And I really wish that our government would do a deep dive. You know, here in the United States, you do have your First Amendment rights.
Copy.
You do have protected free speech. But that doesn't necessarily mean that people in other countries have First Amendment protected rights when they're posting things from other country purportedly to be like pro-American accounts. Mm-hmm. Right? We saw a lot of that happen when Elon ended up dumping, all of the countries of origin and stuff like that over on X. So we saw very large MAGA accounts, like a million followers that were coming out of countries like Turkey, Syria, et cetera. And I think a lot of that is mis and disinformation operations that are taking place by countries like Russia, China, and Iran. Mm-hmm. And so when those things are coming out, you know, people see that, they don't necessarily look into the country of origin that it's coming out of. And they just automatically assume it to be legitimate and they start sharing it. And that's one of the things that, you know, the enemies of the United States are trying to do is just rip this country apart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to work if these people are complicit in this. They continue to push out this information, not fact check it. We fact check it. I try to fact check everything before putting it out there because I'm always on edge about all of this. Matt, let's talk about what we originally booked you to come on to talk about today. That's Venezuela. Obviously, tensions are heating up, and I've been talking to a lot of people about this internally and people who have a foot in the door when it comes to this topic over at the Pentagon and other places as well. And they're telling me that things are going to start ramping up a bit. President Trump was asked about this yesterday in clip 14. Take a listen.
Venezuela to force Maduro from power.
Well, I think it probably would. I can't tell. That's up to him what he wants to do. I think it would be smart for him to do that. But again, we're going to find out. Look, Venezuela did terrible things to the United States. They sent hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, into our open border. They sent their criminals, they sent their prisoners, they sent their drug dealers, they sent their mentally insane and incompetent people into our country more than any other country. Others did too. The Congo did. Others did too. And we just let them come right in because we were run by a stupid president. But you don't have a stupid president anymore.
We don't have a stupid president anymore. He's taking on this fight. And he's looking to push back on Nicolas Maduro. Like I said in the open, too, you know, Barack Obama was not a fan of Maduro either. In fact, coming out and calling him a bunch of nasty names, but didn't do anything to push back on this front. So far, what do you make of the president's reaction to this in regards to trying to hold Nicolas Maduro's feet to the fire, try to push him out as the leader of Venezuela?
Well, I mean, let's be clear. Back in 2019, Trump was trying to push Maduro out, right? And we had a former U.S. Army Green Beret that actually had a contracting company who claims that the people that were coordinating this with him back in 2019 and 2020 were directly underneath like Trump's presidency, right? So people that were in the Oval Office that were very close to him, that were meeting with him and explaining how all of this stuff was going to go down. And of course, that plot within itself ended up getting foiled. And allegedly, it was because of agency contact that basically ended up rolling over on the guy, got numerous of his people killed over inside Venezuela. And it was just this huge scandal that ended up taking place. So he's been trying to do this for years. I think what Trump's actually doing and what, you know, the DOJ and what the Department of War is now doing is using what legal authorities they have in order to accomplish that. Now, they're pushing really hard on the line of it being about drugs. And I don't think anybody in the right mind is looking at Venezuela thinking that we're going to commit over 30% of the United States Navy to go against a country that's not even in the top five of delivering drugs into the United States of America. So there's something much larger at play here, very larger at play. And I do believe personally it has to do with Russia, China, and Iran. The three boats that ended up getting seized by the United States government, the three oil tankers, are all rumored or to be confirmed to be belonging to Iran's IRGC. And what they're doing is they're taking their boats and they're bringing them to Venezuela, filling it up with Venezuelan oil, and then selling it to China And then that money then goes into funding the IRGC, and then in turn ends up going and funding terrorist organizations like Hezbollah and the Houthis over inside of Yemen. So that's just one tiny little aspect that you kind of look at that ends up going in here. But we have way too many forces that are committed. We got major buildups over inside of Tampa with refueling tankers. We've got so many F-35. It's just so much. And we just committed more aircraft carriers to the Pacific because we're concerned about Chinese aggression. And China came out very, very ticked off yesterday, saying that they want to basically go to the international courts because they think all of this is illegal. And at the same time that they did that, you know, we ended up getting leaks from the Pentagon coming out stating that China is moving 100 nuclear weapons into silos up over by the Mongolian border. So we've got all sorts of stuff that's going on the world stage, and all roads are kind of leading back to Venezuela. Venezuela is essentially a hub for what I'm calling like the new axis of evil, right? Between China, Russia, and Iran. IRGC has been confirmed to be over inside of Venezuela. You've got Hezbollah confirmed to be over inside of Venezuela. Obviously, Russia has been confirmed to be over inside of Venezuela. So you've got all of these other people that are confirming. Now, the scariest part to me when it comes down to this is you have these smuggling routes that are in place between Venezuela and the United States. And we know that because these drug boats are moving back and forth. And on those boats, you can move, people, and you can move whatever goods or commodity they have on there, which are purported to be drugs. I've got contacts in the intel community that told me on some of these seized ships that they ended up getting, they ended up coming across weapons that were being, and I'm going to leave what weapons they were, but weapons from Iran that were being shipped into Venezuela. And so we've got all of these different threats. And the question is whether or not Iran, China, Russia, or any of these other terror organizations that they're all attached to are shipping weapons and personnel here into the United States to conduct terror attacks. And I think that's the very real threat that the United States is kind of concerned about. You know, underneath Biden, they said that, you know, we had how many millions of people, 20 plus million people that ended up flooding across the border. And we don't know because it's all estimations. And those people are coming from countries like Pakistan. You know, inside Pakistan, you have more foreign terror Islamic organizations than like any other country on the planet. And they were just pouring across the border. And they still are to this day. We have the most secure border in our nation's history, according to this administration, but it's still not secure. You know, 500,000 people this year estimated to be coming across the border, half a million, CBP encounters on the border this year. Well, how many of those ended up being gotaways? How many people were not caught, and what countries of origin did they end up coming from? And you talk about the Chinese, Belt and Road Initiative. You talk about the Darien Gap that's taking place down there. And so you've got not just human smuggling, drug smuggling, but very likely different weapons attacks and things like that could be coming to the United States of America. And one of the ones that scares me the absolute most was the thwarted ricin attack that took place over inside of India. Are you familiar with that one?
No, I'm not. Detail that for me, because that's interesting.
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago, and it was right before, we started really stepping up our game over outside of Venezuela. You had a ricin attack that ended up getting thwarted by the authorities over in India, and it was rumored that the ricin ended up getting moved into the country from Pakistan, and that they ended up making everything over inside of India. But they had enough like mash to essentially kill 250,000 plus people with the amount of ricin. You know, picture ricin like fentanyl. You know, it's just a tiny little amount of something, and if injected correctly or put into a water system, put into anything, it can only survive in particular, environments. But I mean, you picture a kilo of freaking ricin making its way into the United States of America and the amount of damage that could do. And so I think really the Trump administration is concerned on tons of different levels, and their ultimate goal is to get rid of Maduro, because what we're seeing is Chinese and Russian influence over inside of South America moving into our hemisphere. I'd almost equate it to like Cuban Missile Crisis 2.0 in that aspect.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating. First off, because I missed that story, but I'm going to dig into that one later. But I also wanted to talk to you about, you mentioned China and trying to obviously gain access over on this front. You know, we had the Texas Agriculture Commissioner on the show just a few weeks ago, and she detailed how China was looking to purchase a bunch of land here in Texas, but strategically on our border. And now, I mean, I kind of figured exactly what she was alluding to here, but we know why. I mean, they're trying their best to bring things into this country, and they're looking just to have access to our country without any types of checks and balances, without having Border Patrol intervene or anything else like that. But interesting enough, the only reason why we were able to shut that down is when the state learned about it. The state actually outbidded them on the land and was able to purchase that land from potentially China getting access to it. So again, we're in a really bad situation right now. And that's why I kind of assume when you look at Venezuela and how they continue to make it all about the drug related issues, it just doesn't make any sense to me, given the fact that drugs aren't largely coming in from Venezuela. Although we are doing those strikes again, it just seems to be a bigger issue than most people probably even know as of right now. I know we did a Rasmussen Reports poll yesterday, and I believe it was 52 or 58% of Republicans in this country believe that Venezuela also was the reason for interference in 2020. So there's a lot of things about Venezuela that have people on edge these days. But you also mentioned the oil tankers, and I wanted to get back to that because in clip 15, President Trump actually addressed what his plans are with those oil tankers that have been seized. Take a listen.
Speaking of Venezuela, oil, what are we going to do with the oil that we have?
Going to do with what?
The oil that has been seized. The United States seized 1.9 million barrels of oil on December 10th.
We're going to keep it.
Where's it going? Are we going to sell it or put it in the strategic
reserve? Maybe we'll sell it. Maybe we'll keep it. Maybe we'll use it in the strategic reserves. We're keeping it. We're keeping the ships also.
Okay, Matt, I know you're not a lawyer. You wear many hats, but not legal. Do you think we're going to be able to get away with keeping Venezuela's oil?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, like one of the main things that Trump ended up coming out with, what was it, just a few days ago, saying that the reason that we're going after these tankers is basically to reclaim, you know, $5 billion in losses from a deal gone bad back in the 60s. And so on an international level, is anybody really going to do anything about this, right? Is anybody really going to step up and demand that we give oil back to the IRGC? I don't think that's going to be the case. And do I think that Trump is going to end up putting it in there? Yeah, it's probably going to end up in our strategic reserve. But when you really look at the amount of oil that we're talking about from these seized tankers, one of them was empty. But when we're really looking at like the amount of oil that ended up getting seized, it's absolutely nothing, you know, and you know this down inside Texas, you have like tons of refineries that are down there. I mean, that oil would be processed in like a morning cigarette break for some of these oil refineries, right? Like it would take nothing for them to get that done. So it's not really that much oil that we end up seizing and that we're going to end up holding on to. And that's why I go back to, listen, I think that this has way more to do with what's on those ships other than oil and more to do with, you know, taking funding away from the IRGC. And I hate to say it, but, you know, we're also looking at a time when, you know, Netanyahu and Israel had came out and stated to the United States over the weekend that they're worried about another attack taking place, you know, by Iran on Israel. And so now at that time that we're getting this information out that Israel's complaining that Iran might end up attacking them again, we have the U.S. intervening with the IRGC and taking funding away from them at the exact same time. So, I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities here.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of possibilities. We're going to be following it, obviously, because Venezuela is going to be hot in the news cycle, I could assume, over the next few weeks, because I do believe that everything's going to ramp up quite quickly. So we'll keep following that, Matt. I also want to get to another story that dropped yesterday in regards to the Brown University shooting. Now, you've been covering it extensively on your podcast as well as on your X page as well. But I wanted to make sure that we highlighted this because the DEI police chief of Brown University has been placed on leave after failing to act on a custodial referral in regards to a person that he flagged as suspicious. This custodian apparently said that they saw dozens of instances where this killer was apparently making its way onto campus. They alerted their law enforcement agency, which is on campus, and it looks like they possibly maybe did nothing about it at all. What do you make of this latest failure? Because, you know, as we continue to go through it, we're not seeing any surveillance footage from the actual classroom, from the actual campus. We know that this is a foreigner. I keep saying this all the time. If we would have had surveillance footage on campus of this person's face or maybe his eyes or something, we possibly could have done biometrics on him because he is a foreigner. And to come in and out of this country, his biometrics are being stored on a federal database. So what do you make about this? This is another failure at a local university level. And all so far we have is a police chief who's now been placed on leave.
Yeah, this is a huge, huge sign of how liberal policies are just constantly failing here in the United States of America. You're talking about a building in particular that had a homeless man living in the basement of it. And there's no way the university was not aware of that, right? And that ends up being the guy that they end up blowing this case wide open with, a homeless guy living in the basement that's chasing him around. That tells you how poor security at that university is, that a homeless man was chasing around a suspicious person. And meanwhile, you have custodians that are inside of there staying, you know, and going to, I believe it was actually like campus security is what he ended up stating yesterday, if I remember correctly. But him going to campus security numerous times, and the response that he ends up getting from security is stating, well, you know, that's not really what we do. And it's, how do you have people wandering? I mean, maybe he's not lying. You know, maybe that security officer is not lying. That's not within the directives. That's not exactly what they're told to do, because you got homeless guys living in the basement. I talked to students from over at the university from recent years, and what they have told me is that, generally speaking, during this study time, those doors just stay propped open with a chair. And I think the real question here, like when we start to look at this, is whether or not they were actually telling us the truth. They released a map that showed the shooter's movements before and after the shooting. And one of the areas that he traveled through was a corner just north of the actual target building itself. And that corner has three different security cameras on it. Three. Not one, not two, three cameras. How is it that you have three security cameras on a corner in which the investigation itself shows that that shooter ended up moving through there, and they ended up not releasing any information whatsoever out of those cameras? So the question is, are those cameras turned on? I don't think we've got a clear response or answer out of the university on whether or not those cameras are actually operating. I haven't heard of one of you.
No. And when they're asked about it, they completely bounce around and they try to deflect as much as they can. I saw one of, I think it was the president. Yeah, she was confronted about it, and someone pulled her out from not having to answer that question directly. Yeah, no, and I can't imagine why you'd blow it off. I mean, it's a campus in 2025. You're telling me that you guys don't have cameras in these areas. And most importantly, too, I mean, okay, so, and this is my conspiracy here. Maybe it's possible there was a hacking situation, or their cameras went down due to a hacking situation. They just don't want to come out and say it, because so many times companies won't tell you when they're hacked or when they're being blackmailed. And they are forced to pay up a massive amount of change to the hackers itself. I don't know, Matt. Maybe they're just trying to hide the fact that maybe they were hacked prior to all of this, and their camera went down. But then when it looks like that this individual was doing a dry run and was going to the school itself and was looking around, maybe they were just looking for access so they could get in and out of without camera spotting them.
But you're talking weeks prior, right? And this is a man who actually attended that university as well. And so you're talking weeks prior. And if the camera system had been hacked and it was being held ransom, you're talking about those camera systems being down for weeks, right? Weeks, not just a day, not just a couple days, but like weeks. And they end up not bringing this up. And I would think that there would be some record of that going towards law enforcement, especially if they, you know, because the university has to pay out money for that if that's going to be the case. So I almost say that the university probably, like most likely, just turned the dang things off. Or didn't have them on because they were worried. The other very, very troubling thing that nobody wants to talk about on this university is why the feds were there the day prior to the shooting. Did you hear about this?
Oh, no, I didn't. Yeah, detail that for me.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. The university ended up putting out an alert the day before the shooting that the feds were on the ground. So the original alert for the campus safety ended up coming out and stating that there was a man purported to be a federal agent that presented himself to be a federal agent that actually detained a student and placed them in cuffs and held on to them for a period of time. And they told the students that they need to exercise caution, that you have these federal agents, people that are pretending to be feds, on the ground putting people in cuffs until they get it confirmed. Later on the day, they came out and they said that they did confirm that it was the Fugitive Task Force that was on the ground at the university. And so that's why I bring up that part of me thinks that they probably just turned the cameras off, because those cameras supposedly have facial recognition software on them. And if they don't want to work with the feds, they don't want to release that information. What do? You turn them off.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, I don't have anything to turn over. You guys can't use exigency. You can't come in and just rip our servers. You can't just take this stuff from us, which law allows them to do, you know, in this case. But who is the Fugitive Task Force looking for? Why is nobody asking those questions?
Yeah.
I mean, these are all common sense things that really need to come out.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they will, because I'm sure lawsuits are going to start piling up very, very soon, and discovery won't be kind to Brown University today. Matt, thank you for all the incredible work you do. I appreciate you jumping on with us and helping us understand the very latest on all of these subject matters in Venezuela, obviously, as well as the Epstein dump that we just received the documents on, and so much more at Brown University as well. So thank you, Matt, for joining us again. Folks, give him a follow on X at AngerTab. Give him a follow on X right now. More to come in just a few moments, guys. We're digging into the Second Amendment and how the DOJ is claiming that they are now helping fight to maintain it. Never heard that before. We'll discuss in just a few moments.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it? I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one, and the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new products, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else is doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after The Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
The Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalists. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back to the show. We're excited to have you on board. A lot more to dive into. First, before we get to the DOJ saying that they're defending our Second Amendment rights, I wanted to bring you an update as we are here at InfoWars digging into the latest Epstein document dump. Interesting enough, there is an FBI intake form that has also been made public. And in this form, it looks like there appears to be a man who's claiming that he was actually raped by Jeffrey Epstein. The details of this are quite alarming. It looks like He also claims to have witnessed three other boys who may have been a victim of this as well. They were strapped down next to him. The details, I'll just post the actual article, the actual clipping on X, because I don't want to have to read this on air. It's very, very graphic. But this was taken back in, this claim was made back in 93, and it was taken, it looks like, in 2020. And then, as you could see, the person in this intake form is claiming to have witnessed Jeffrey Epstein's deformed penis, which we hear time and time again in court filings as well, which is being detailed by many, many victims. So again, this just being dropped now. We've posted this, though, if you'd like to look on my X page at Brianna Morello right now up on Twitter, read it for yourself. But we're digging into all of this. And as we continue to uncover more stuff that's being dropped right now, there's also a sexual assault claim that we are getting ready to bring to you in just a few moments in regards to possibly a woman who came, or girl came forward and reported potentially the president of the United States, President Trump, and Jeffrey Epstein. Again, this is a claim being made. We are just finalizing and getting it together. We'll have it for you guys in just a bit. Obviously, a lot happening here. Even the DOJ coming out and saying you guys are going to see some things. And just know it's politically motivated. So we'll tread lightly. Let's turn to the DOJ right now, though. Let's talk about the good things that they're doing. And there's not many, but there's some. As many of you guys know, Harmeet Dhillon is running the Civil Rights Division right now. And so far, she seems to be doing a really good job. She has become a Second Amendment advocate, and she's actually pushing those in her department to defend the Second Amendment. They've created this separate little division within the Civil Rights Division itself. It's a special section that is meant to take on these fights to defend your rights. Well, yesterday, they filed a lawsuit against the D.C. Metropolitan Police, claiming that the district government and MPD have violated rights, the Second Amendment rights, by prohibiting possession of an AR-15-style rifle and many other rifles that are protected under the Constitution. This is according to DOJ. Now, under D.C. law, anyone wishing to own a firearm must register it with MPD. However, the D.C. code is imposing a swift ban on registration. And thus far, they've made it a really tough time to get a firearm in D.C. This is what's going on, though, all across the country. Liberal cities have been doing this for quite some time now. I know because in New York, I have a lot of friends and family who are still there. They've been waiting years and years, even veterans, to get their licenses, to even have a firearm in their home. And there's a reason for that, obviously. They do their very best to prevent and to block the American people from being able to protect themselves. And also, worth noting, the DOJ also filed a lawsuit last week against the officials in the Virgin Islands for, again, what they say is in the infringement on gun rights, requiring them to obtain a firearm permit, and how they are slowballing a lot of this. So it's a common theme here. Joining me to discuss, the Second Amendment attorney, Stephen Stamboli. He joins us now to discuss all things related to that, plus FOIAs. Because full disclosure, Stephen, you are one of my great attorneys over when it comes to FOIAing. And we just recently won a lawsuit that I'm excited to break down for our audience and then help them understand how they could get involved and request documents from our government through that process. We'll get to that in a bit. I want to get your take on this, though. The DOJ saying that they are now going to be fighting for American Second Amendment rights. And they filed several lawsuits. And it looks like they're doing just that. But I'm no attorney. You are. So here's my question for you. Is the DOJ actually helping defend the Second Amendment?
Well, it's good to see you, Brianna. Thanks for having me on. It is a new day at DOJ. You know, when we had Trump 1 come in and he was talking about how he was going to be the most pro-Second Amendment president, and then he immediately did the bump stock ban and some other nonsense, color me skeptical on Trump 2 when he came in. It's like, I'm still going to be the most Second Amendment friendly president. Well, he has fulfilled that promise. Ms. Dhillon, and through Pam Bondi's DOJ, has done absolutely incredible work. And I know that some people are saying, well, it doesn't go far enough yet. She hasn't gone far enough yet in doing some of the things that people in the gun rights community like myself want her to do. But it's amazing so far what she's done. I mean, we could talk about all of the different things, but Ms. Dhillon argued at the Seventh Circuit a couple of months ago over the Illinois Community Act assault weapons ban. She argued at the Seventh Circuit. She filed a amicus brief suggesting that the Supreme Court grants certiorari in the Wolford case, which is a case out of Hawaii. She's filed a case in the U.S. Virgin Islands saying that the U.S. Virgin Islands was violating the Second Amendment. And now we just see yesterday she filed a case in D.C. against the D.C. ban on registration of AR-15. So the things that this DOJ is doing is blowing my mind. Honest to God, would never have thought that we would have the United States government come in and support gun rights. And my hat's off to Harmeet, Pam Bondi's DOJ, and even to President Trump for keeping his promise. And given that we're in, like, you know, the first year of Trump's number two presidency, I suspect that we're going to see Ms. Dillon's unit go hot and heavy into the Second Amendment. And I'm thrilled to be a part of this and just watch what happens.
Yeah, I mean, this is great news for Americans all across the country, because time and time again, no one really challenges these blue states and these blue cities when they try to push back and try to prevent Americans from obtaining firearms, which they're legally allowed to do so. So this is good news on that front. You know, yesterday we were actually talking, I was talking with one of my guests briefly about this, and I kind of want to get your take on this. There's a lot of challenges in regards to illegal aliens having firearms. I know that this is kind of working its way right now through the federal courts, but there's been several cases. I remember back in 2024, an Obama-appointed judge actually decided to rule in favor of one illegal alien who was charged with illegally obtaining a firearm. And we were kind of going back and forth a little bit about this yesterday. Are illegal aliens, are they allowed to obtain firearms legally right now? Because it sounded like the courts were going back and forth and really truly believe that the Second Amendment applies to them.
Well, I might be a little biased here, and let me explain it. My dad is an immigrant. He came over here legally, okay? Spent his 9 to 10 years doing all this stuff to try to come here, get naturalized and whatever. I take a very dim view of illegal immigration. And if it were up to me and what I believe the Constitution says when it talks about the people, I don't believe that illegal immigrants are part of the people. I don't believe, even if the Supreme Court came out today and said illegal immigrants are part of the people, I would not subscribe to that theory. I don't believe that they do. So when you have some of these Democrat judges saying, well, if we apply Bruin, you know, the New York Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, the New York case in 2022, where the Supreme Court said you have a right to public carry, I don't believe that illegals have a right to, like, anything. I think that illegals should be kicked out of the country. That's I know that that sounds maybe a little bit harsh, but no. It can't be that our Constitution allows you to walk across the border and immediately take all of the rights of citizenship. And what it does is it cheapens what American citizenship means. I believe it means something more than just, I'm here, I get all the rights of citizenship, even though I've broken the law to come across, I've done all of these bad things, but I'm here now, and so you have to treat me like one of you, and you're not, sorry.
Yeah, and that's the problem that we're having right now. And I know the courts are playing it out right now. I look forward to that making its way to the Supreme Court, hopefully quickly, while we still have a conservative majority to weigh in on that one, because that's a big one. There's so far two cases, and I've been trying to keep my eye on them as they move around a little bit. So we'll keep watching that. But I wanted to get your take, because I know I constantly have people calling in and I try to give them advice, but I'm no attorney and obviously you are. But, you know, you and I we've gotten into a couple of fights with the government, which I know our audience loves, in regards to their refusal to comply with FOIAs. Now, for those of you at home, FOIA is Freedom of Information Act requests. And this is one of the ways that you could force the government to be transparent. And let's be honest, folks, as you see with these Epstein files that we'll be covering all day, the government does not want transparency, even though they'll look you in the eye and say that they do want transparency. But the reality of it is you have to sometimes fight to obtain that transparency. And Stephen, you've done a great job of doing that for me as my lawyer fighting this in Washington, D.C. But under the Biden regime years, surprise, surprise, they tried their very best to not even answer a lot of my FOIA requests. And I was trying to request simple things like how were Americans ending up on terror watch lists? What internal communications did they have that allowed them to be added to these lists? I also requested information regards to specifically TSA, how non-legal, I would say invaders, people who came through our country illegally, who crossed into our country with no documents allegedly on them to prove who they say they are, how they were being allowed to go through TSA without showing ID and boarding on private or commercial planes, I should say. And we had to file that lawsuit, unfortunately, because TSA didn't respond. And as a result of that, we did receive some documents back from TSA. And one of those documents I published on the independentnewsroom.com, and it highlights specifically how the Biden regime was actually allowing illegal aliens into our country and to fly on commercial flights. And all they had to do was hand over their documents saying that, yeah, you are a sex offender, but if you just promise to take these little courses and sign up whenever you get to where you're going, we'll let you travel around our country freely. And so these are people who obviously have sexual convictions, these sex crime convictions, and we're allowing them. They're monsters. They're predators. We're allowing them into our country. So we found that thanks to you helping me do just that. I want to talk about the TSA lawsuit as a whole, though, now that that's officially been settled and it's done for. What do you make of all of this? Because, again, TSA didn't give us everything that we requested, but we got a lot from that lawsuit, and you know better than anyone. So just your reaction overall to the TSA lawsuit that we've since settled.
So first thing with FOIA is it's almost a given that the agency will not respond and that you have to sue them. That has been my experience in doing this for, I don't know, like 11 years in FOIA litigation. When we got those documents from TSA that you had requested about the illegals being able to board, not with identification, you know, there was a big deal about us having to have the stupid real ID with the star and we had to pay additional money for it. Yeah. Apparently, citizens are treated worse in this country than if you were just across the border. It's amazing to me, the documents that you received in that FOIA where they were allowing people with, I can't even remember what they called them, like a warrant or something. If, as long as you presented something with a name on it, they would just assume that you were that person. Mm-hmm. You don't have to stand in front of the little stupid picture ID thing that they make you take your picture, which I don't do, by the way. Yeah. They would just let you board the airplane. And, you know, credit goes to Secretary Noem. As soon as you published that, she revoked all of those policies saying that you can board with warrants or any of those other stupid things that the, in my opinion, treasonous Biden administration allowed to happen. So good job on asking for those documents. It's not something that I would have thought to ask for. But as someone that flies regularly, I saw firsthand when I was flying out of Arizona on a red eye, I was so happy. And this is going to sound dumb, but just hear me out. I was so happy at 11 o'clock flight. I was the only one in my row. Plane was half full or half emptied, however you want to look at it. When the regular boarding stopped, a whole bunch of illegal immigrants got on board and completely filled up the plane. And you could tell that they were illegal, but they had their little Ziploc bag full of their charging cables, and they had their, you know, brown envelope full of their whatever documents that they had with them. And they completely filled the plane. This was on a United flight, too. And then flew to wherever, like I was flying up to Dulles. So half of that plane was full of illegals going to Dulles. Where they went after that, who knows? But it just, it disgusts me that we allowed our country to be used basically as a third world doormat for everybody just to walk into.
Yeah, and it's really infuriating because you and I had that conversation once after we got off the flight, and I was like, okay, what can we request to figure out what they're actually doing here? And still to this day, we don't even know how much of our money went to paying for those flights, because obviously those weren't cheap, and all of these airlines were bankrolling in it, and I'm sure they actually didn't document any of this information. Yeah, I mean, think about all the children. Sadly, I mean, we're talking about over what, 300,000 plus children missing, migrant children missing in this country, and we can't seem to find them because a lot of these kids probably didn't even have their information taken when they were forced onto these planes.
It's so bad walking through these airports. Not now. It's not like that now, but golly, just a couple of years ago, and it's probably when we had that conversation, I was walking through the airport and I would see these ladies, these older ladies with the IOM vests on, International Office of Migration or whatever it stands for. And they were like walking kids to the planes.
Yeah.
Just like, what are we doing here? Like, are we're engaged in like minor child trafficking, basically. And I would really like Congress to say, we're going to have some hearings. How much was United paid? How much was Delta, American, all of these airlines paid to allow all of these illegals into our country and to fly around? I mean, you had Biden with the CBP1 app that you could, instead of having to cross the border illegally walking through the desert, right? You would just hop a flight from Mexico into the United States, wherever you want to go. I can't even believe that it actually happened.
No, I can't either. And it's pretty mind-blowing that this was allowed to take place and didn't really get much in the way of pushback Everyone thought these were people coming to live a better life, and sadly, that wasn't the case. They even stopped the DNA testing, which to me was a very telling sign when they didn't test to make sure that the children actually belonged to the people that were claimed to be their parents. And so, you know, my heart breaks for the real parents, because you don't know if those kids were kidnapped in their native country. You have no idea where those kids were taken from.
No one knows.
And they didn't even care. They didn't even care. You know, we did a story, too, in the beginning of the show in regards to children. One child who was able to break away from a market, I believe this was in Georgia, and run to police and get help. And her and three other kids, or that one child and three other children, were being forced into labor to work at this market. And it was, according to the reports, they believe it's tied to the Mexican cartel. So again, so many kids throughout our country are being forced into these bad situations. And it's all because of the Biden regime. And it's really frustrating to see. But for our audience, because obviously, you know, our audience knows better than anyone else. You can't trust the government. We don't trust the government. We always ask for more questions. I always ask more questions. And I think FOIA is a great way for us to do just that. And you never know what you're going to get from it. One of the most impactful in my lifetime FOIA requests was actually done by The Blaze. And it was in regards to the cash that was being dished out to a lot of these media networks, Fox News, Newsmax, CBS, all of these big time networks were all taking money to promote the vaccine. But they never disclosed, and they never disclosed, I could only speak to Fox at the time I was there. I mean, Fox was only allowing individuals who were going to say positive things about the vaccine. And if you were a critic, we weren't allowed to have them on our show. So they never disclosed that publicly to the audience. But again, we only knew about the HHS money getting paid out to all of these media outlets because of that FOIA request. So for our audience at home who want to create more transparency, not only with the FOIA at the federal level, I know it depends on each local level, but you could do this with any of your governments. Local, I did it obviously with Plano PD, as many of you guys have seen. Walk us through the steps that those at home should take at the federal level, because that's what you could attest to, when it comes to submitting these FOIA requests and what the regulations are, how long they have to wait until they receive a response. Because there is a waiting period that the government has to honor to get back to people who are submitting these requests, correct?
Sure, there is. There's a 20 business day, which the government treats like a suggestion, but it is not. It's actually the law. They have 20 business days to respond and to tell you whether or not they're going to give you the documents that you seek. They can invoke something called unusual circumstances, where they get an extra 10 business days. So suffice to say, a maximum of 30 business days. It's not really that much time. But going back to your original question about what does someone need to do, under FOIA, the government has to give you records that they have. So if you say specifically, like in your TSA lawsuit, if you were to say, you know, you want all records of X, Y, and Z, they have to produce them. FOIA does not require the agencies to answer your question. So if you phrase your request like, how much money has the Biden administration paid for illegals coming from Venezuela? They don't have to answer that. But if you couch it in the terms of, you know, all records of payments to airlines for individuals flying from Venezuela, then if they have to search for that. And if there are responsive records that aren't otherwise exempt. So they do have some exemptions like privacy, like they're not going to name, you know, Jane Doe or John Doe that got the payment to fly on United or something like that. There's national security exemptions. There's a whole variety of different exemptions, but the agency has to tell you, we found responsive records, but we're not giving them to you because they're exempt from FOIA. And here are the exemptions. So it's, I don't mean to, like, you know, be a wet blanket on any of your viewers, but it's not as simple as just filing something. And then the government's like, oh, we got this records request and we need to answer it. The government almost always, to a T, does not want to respond to these. And so we have to sue them. It's better if you have an attorney help you draft your FOIA. Because if they say your FOIA, for instance, is too broad or doesn't describe the records that you want adequately, then they can just say, we don't have to answer it because it's not a proper FOIA. So, I mean, it's kind of stupid, but that's what the government does.
No, that's what they do. They do. And they use the national security excuse as well to kind of back out of things. And you know, you and I right now, we've got the Veterans Affair lawsuit still pending right now. But I think it just highlights the level of just, I'm a little infuriated with the government. I know our audience as well, but the level of excuses that they'll turn to instead of just meeting the request and giving the information that you are rightfully asking for and you're legally allowed to ask for.
Have you told anyone about the VA FOIA specifically? What they said was the reason that they're not giving you documents. The first time that they said that,
we'll let you as my attorney detail that for our audience.
It's the dumbest thing. So in your FOIA, you ask specifically for January 6 VA benefit defendants, right? Or people that were involved with January 6, and you wanted to know why their benefits were either denied, reduced, or whatever. And in one of these documents where they talked about this person's benefits being cut off, there's no names on any of these documents from the VA, but it had like a Florida director of something, and the name of the office escapes me right now. So you submitted that to the VA and said, I want all of these records dealing with this person. Here's a privacy waiver from that particular person, which is something they want if you're not requesting records about yourself. Then the VA came back and through the U.S. attorney in D.C. and said, this isn't a proper FOIA. We have no idea who this Florida director of the VA benefits department is. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, how many Florida directors of the VA do you have? And they're like, oh, it could be 30,000 different people. And we'd have to search 30,000 different email repositories. And so it doesn't pass the smell test. If I have a document, certainly with a tracking number on the document, because all of the VA documents have like a certain ID number where they can go and say, oh, this, you know, matches up with this particular person. And then they made us file a response to their motion for summary judgment, which all that does is it drives up the cost for a FOIA requester, for you specifically, right? And that we had to fight. And then I had to go to a hearing and argue why that this was actually a proper FOIA, because certainly the VA would know for this specific person that we named in the FOIA who their benefit administrator was. I don't know. It's so bizarre to me. And then the judge, of course, denied their motion for summary judgment and ordered them to search. So, you know, good for the judge.
Yeah, and that's the problem here. It's good on the judge. I mean, I literally got on a call with someone from their office and we went over what I was specifically requesting. And then, you know, obviously time passes and I tried emailing this person back. I don't think I heard back. I think that's exactly what happened. But again, it's just... it's so crazy the level these people go to try to not give you things. I mean, when I try to submit a FOIA request, here's an example, to HHS, it always tells me that's going to email me a code that I have to verify before logging into my account, and I never get the email, and there's no way to contact anyone. And so they try to create these little barriers because I get it. It's probably really frustrating for them because they get so many requests, but it's their job to do it.
Sure.
And we'll hold
their feet. It's the
law. It's the law. It literally is the law.
I know. I don't understand this. When, like, let's say the IRS came to me and sends me a letter and says, you have to respond within 20 business days. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm just too busy. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think is going to happen? But yeah. The agency, when there's a law that says you have to respond within 20 business days and they just don't. And the courts are like, yeah, they were busy.
they will try their very best. Stephen, thank you for joining us. Again, to our audience, I want to remind you that he is a 2A lawyer and you do an incredible job at FOIA as well. So, folks, if you want to learn more about his work, head on over to his website, sdslaw.us. That is where you guys go to learn more. Thank you so much, my friend, for joining me. We appreciate all your insight on this issue. And, you know, the Second Amendment stuff, too, is really, really important. So we appreciate it. So thank you.
Thanks, man.
All right, guys, we got more going on over here that we look forward to diving into in just a few moments. Looking forward to the next round of Epstein documents we're getting. By the way, Harrison Smith joining me in studio. He's going to give us a little bit of a history lesson on Kwanzaa. Just in time for the holiday season, of course. So we look forward to having him in studio. But again, we're learning more and more and more from these Epstein document dumps. Obviously, a lot of this is politically motivated, but we're looking through claims that are being made, and we'll get it to you once we have verified that it is authentic. I'm telling you guys, you can't trust what ends up on the internet these days. You have to go digging for it yourself, and they just released thousands of documents. So there's a lot of digging to be done. We'll have more on that in just a few moments, and we'll also be taking your calls in the third hour of the show. So in the meantime, head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com because we just launched the beef cooking tallow that is now available over at the shop. And I'm telling you, if you're looking to have a healthier cooking experience, this is something you're going to want to snag right now over at thealexjonesstore.com. Get on over there right now and make sure you grab yourself some today.
So I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't know, and I'm going over there. You finance it. You paid for it. Your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. the receiver won't let us order new product over at InfoWarsStore.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the, you know, middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air? Can I do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed, two I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King, make no peace with evil, say Crusader King, and then do like that still image of me, and it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy Unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy in a tube, or you get it for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens for their hats. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters, and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you'll be the ones that shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like in Star Trek Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.